afternoon, and welcome to Let's Talk, The Pastor's Inn. I'm program host Kip Allen. Let's Talk is the program for the Lutheran layman, you know, the person who believes but maybe have some questions. In short, just like me, there's a lot I do not understand, and not necessarily things that are soul-shaking, or sometimes it is, or it might just be something that's been on my mind for a while. And I find that rather than getting into a deep theological discussion, sometimes a casual, informal, front porch-style talk at the pastor's the best way to understanding. That's what this program is all about. Today's guest is Lance O'Donnell of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. I have my questions. I'm sure you have yours. Now, you can send your questions by email at any time to letstalk@kfuo.org or call in during the program at area code 314-821-0850 in the St. Louis area or Metro East or anywhere else in North America. Pastor O'Donnell, welcome up to the front porch.
Hey there. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine, but you know, I understand you've had a quite an experience. In fact, I might even say it's possibly a life-changing experience. Do you want to tell us about that?
Oh, well, I had knee surgery in February, and then I was doing really great. And then on Ash Wednesday, I had a lot of trouble breathing and had to go to the emergency room. And then I had found out I had blood clots all over the place in my lungs. So yeah, we had a real scare and a life changer for us.
It is. When you realize that you have a condition that you might not pull out of,
it
gives you pause for thought.
Being in ICU, when I was expecting to get ready to really start moving again after a little arthroscopic surgery, that was a surprise.
Did you push yourself too hard?
No.
Interesting.
No. I was a very good boy. I did everything they told me to do.
Oh, what did you learn from the experience?
Oh, man. Well, lots of things. I mean, forgive me for the pause. It's so much. I mean, you know, my daughter who was in play practice that day, my 15-year-old, and she got out of play practice and found out that her father was in intensive care.
Oh, boy.
You know, and burst into tears. And, you know, it wasn't me going into intensive care that really got me the blood. It was hearing about her crying, you know, and then calling her friends crying. And that's what really kind of shook me is, wow, Lance, you could have, you know, that little girl could have been left without a dad. And so that, you know, it just began, as I'm sitting there in intensive care, some really serious reflection on, you know, how I take care of my temple, my body, and my marriage, my conduct of my pastoral work, you know. It changes a lot of things.
It does indeed. As you know, I've been there.
Yeah.
And it really does change your outlook, and it does change the way that you look at things. And I mentioned, you know, I've had two heart attacks. Now, the first...
You were how old the first?
46. I was 46.
Good gravy.
And, well, that was actually my attitude. I was suddenly getting these chest pains, and I was saying to myself, hey, it can't be my heart. I'm only 46.
Right.
And so, like an idiot, I ignored it.
Sure.
And I didn't find out until my second heart attack just what had happened. When they went in, they found out one of my arteries was completely blocked off from the prior heart attack, and between 10 and 20% of my heart was dead.
How about that? How much later was the second one than the first?
9 years.
Holy mackerel.
9 years.
Wow.
And, I was 55 when the second one hit me. And... I was, to an extent, I was in denial on that, but I knew this time something was seriously wrong.
Yeah.
And I only ignored it for 24 hours before going to the hospital.
Yeah, well, good. You know, forgive me when we corresponded by email what I told you, but, you know, for the listeners out there, I have a middle to larger size parish, and we have two Ash Wednesday services And I was scheduled, our associate was scheduled to lead the Ash Wednesday services, and I was just going to help. I was going to be the liturgist. And I took, I taught confirmation classes in the morning, and I was grading some tests. And then I got a call from the nurse, because I had sent them a message the day before. It said, I'm a little short of breath. You know, I think I might have bronchitis. Can you look at my lungs when I come into my appointment tomorrow? I was scheduled for an appointment on Thursday. And the nurse called and said, well, if you're short of breath, given the fact that you just had knee surgery, you might have blood clots. You basically need just to go to the emergency room. And I thought, you're kidding me. You know, kind of like when you were 46, right? I thought, really? I'm thinking to myself. And I said, I have some things to get done. I can't go into the hospital right now. And so, you know, I did a couple things. And then, you know, our health plan, Concordia Health Plan, offered a promotion where they would basically pay for your new Apple Watch if you did some physically helpful things, right? So I have this new Series 4 Apple Watch that does an electrocardiogram. And so right before the 12:15 Ash Wednesday service, I took it. And it showed I was sitting there, my heart rate at 110 beats a minute and irregular.
Oops.
And I thought to myself, you know, I really should go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad had had a quadruple bypass when he was 48, and I'm 49. And I said to myself, well, right, if I'm going to have heart surgery today, I want to have the Lord's Supper before I have heart surgery. So I went and did the service, and then I went to ER. As it turned out, I should have gone to ER exactly when the nurse told me.
Yeah.
So I was a real bozo.
Oh, boy. That is so familiar. I mean, it was before I had the second one. I've been having chest pains intermittently for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to shake it off. Because, you know, the pain would hit, and then it would go away. Rarely lasted more than 30 minutes. Sometimes it just disappeared after a couple of minutes. And I was very short of breath. I remember I was working at a building, a newspaper out in Palm Springs, and I had to go between the first and second floor quite frequently.
Sure.
And I couldn't make the stairs.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, well, gee, I'm just getting old and fat. No, I was getting heart failure.
Yeah.
A couple of people even said I looked bad. I said, oh, no, I'm okay. I'm just overweight and fat and old.
And that's been my typical line. I'm just a chubby little Irishman. Chubby little guy, right?
Oh, man.
I'm curious. So being on the porch here, right, mm-hmm. you and I as friends, what you had your second, you said you were 55 when you had the second one that you actually knew was a heart attack,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so how did things change for you after that?
Biggest thing with me was perspective.
Okay. Fill me in.
Well, you know, I was dealing with deadlines every day. I was having problems at home. There were bills to pay, and there was all this nonsense. And, you know, that's really what it was. You know, I was in intensive care, as you were.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I realized that, you know, the only real questions is whether I was going to live or die.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a darn thing I could do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I examined that a little bit further. And I said, you know, there's one or two possible outcomes here. I'm either going to survive and I'll go back to my family and friends. Or I'm not going to survive. And as a believer, mm-hmm. I know I will wind up in heaven. I would not have liked to have faced that decision if I wasn't a believer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the lesson that came to me on that was, no matter what happened, I was going to win.
Yeah.
And it also made me really step back and reexamine where my life's priorities were.
Sure.
And I'm still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's Yeah, I totally get it. It's it was, you know, on a variety of different levels. This was I'll call it a vocational wake up call.
Okay.
I have my 15-year-old is just this wonderful, joyful little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I heard that she just broke into tears, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, Lance, you know, I realized, like you did, there's only so much that I can control, but that there were some things that I could control, that I wasn't doing what I should, you know, in terms of taking care of myself.
Yeah.
You know, I had, you know, my dad had a quadruple bypass at 48, you know, and he smoked from the time he was like 7 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, and he and my mom, you know, had invested their life savings in a small business, and that business was failing, and he discovered that one of his friends betrayed him, you know, while he was recovering from the surgery. And, you know, it wasn't too long after surgery he started smoking again.
Mm.
You know, when the doc told him, you start again, you're going to die. He started smoking again, and then, you know, he'd go get a big block of cheese from Sam's Club and come home from work and stress out and have a couple beers and a bunch of cheese and smoke, right? And so 2 years later, he was driving home from a Christmas party, and he had a heart attack at the wheel and hit a tree and died.
Oh, boy.
You know, 50 years old. And I had always thought to myself, you know, I don't have the smoking issue. I don't, you know, I don't smoke. I don't, you know, I'd like to have a beer here and there, but I'm not a, you know, but I do stress eat. I mean, I'm not overly obese, but I'm not, you know, I do stress eat. And, you know, I just thought about after Dad died, I'm in the back of my mind is this, you know, taking care of your temple. And thinking about how I felt after Dad died,
mm-hmm.
You know, Dad, you know, I was mad, honestly, a little bit.
I understand.
You know,
that.
You, there's some things you could have done. You know, I could have really used you. You know, you would have been a great grandfather. And so I found, you know, thinking to myself, I don't want to put my kids in the same position. You know, I don't want, you know, I'm thinking of the passage in Ephesians 6, right, where Paul says, you know, fathers, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the fear and instruction of the Lord.
Hmm.
You know, I wanted to be able to face my kids and say, you know, I did what, you know, even if I face whatever I face health-wise in the future, I want to be able to tell them, you know, I tried, I did what I could, right? I didn't give up. I tried to do better.
Well, I did too, you know, for the first part of it. You know, and I had a lot of anger in one area during the recovery. I was talking to my cardiologist, and he said, "Well, you know, you're going to have to lose weight and change your diets, and you're going to have to quit smoking." And I said, "You know, I don't smoke. I haven't smoked for 30 years." And he looks at me and says, "Well, you know, I can smell it on you. I know you're smoking." And that's when I said, "Well, my wife's a smoker."
Oh.
Does she smoke in the house? She smokes in the house. She smokes in the car. She even smokes in the shower.
Yeah, sure.
And he said, "Well, doesn't she know that when she smokes, you smoke?"
Yeah.
And I went home after that, and I relayed that to her, because that had been an issue. I at least wanted her to stop smoking in the car with me.
Right.
And I did relay that to her. And I remember I used that line, "Doesn't she know that when she smokes, you smoke," and to this day, I remember her exact words, "Oh, poo."
As in? That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of trouble dealing with that.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I had to think about that, and I have to admit, after a couple of 3 years, you know, I lost the weight and what have you, cut back on my drinking, and but then I started a backslide.
Yeah.
And then I saw a picture of myself.
Sure.
And suddenly realized that I was hitting 300 pounds.
Yep.
And so I went on, I made up my own diet. And I lost less than a year. I lost about 80 pounds.
Good for you.
Unfortunately, I put a few of them back, but now I'm doing it again. I've lost another 10.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, I'm down a little bit. That has been the man. You know, this is ringing it. You know, both any parent wants their children to do better than they did.
Yeah.
You know, any decent parent, right? And I talk with my mom every day. You know, she's 76 and living in Florida, and we talk all the time. And I know my mom wants me to do better in every level. You know, mm-hmm. She wants me to be a better husband. She wants me to take better care of my body than she did. You know, all that stuff. My dad would be exactly the same way. And in many respects, I have. But one of the, you know, sitting there in ICU. You know, I knew there were a couple things that I couldn't look at my kids and say, I'm doing what I need to do. And so, you know, that's part of the change we're in the midst of right now. You know, in terms of taking care of my body.
Well, you have to do that. I was fortunate, I guess, quote unquote, in that neither my wife nor I had children.
Sure.
So that wasn't an issue with us. Although I was very much aware that if anything happened to me, my wife would be in very serious troubles.
Right.
So I did what I could as far as that was concerned. And she did have some family and friends. We spoke about, you know, if I didn't make it, what would happen?
Sure.
But yeah, that was something that weighed on me. But and again, it was that helplessness. But I somehow knew that this would work out.
Yeah.
I don't quite know how to explain that. Maybe, you know, if you're not a believer, you won't understand it.
Yep.
Somehow I knew it was going to work out. Even if I died, I knew it was going to work out.
Well, and, you know, my wife and I have four children. We have a 20-year-old daughter, an 18-year-old son, a 15-year-old daughter, and an 11-year-old son. And, you know, the 18-year-old is a freshman in college, and so, you know, we're starting to have more adultish conversations. And so after, you know, he was home after I got out of the hospital, and he was getting ready to go back to school, and I pulled him aside. I said, I need to have a little bit of a conversation here with you, and it's going to seem a little morbid, but I want you to know some things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if something happens to me, right, I want you to know, we've got some decent life insurance. Your mom's going to be okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have to make some adjustments, you know. And I just view this as part of, you know, as my vocation as a father, you know, I think a part of the vocation of a father is to help prepare the kids for things that might happen. And it seemed like may seem like a morbid conversation, but
a necessary one.
But a necessary one. I said, you know, I want you to know that, you know, you guys are going to be okay. You'll have to make some life adjustments. But I said, son, you know, if something did happen to me, I want you to live your life. Get married, have kids, serve the Lord. He's in school to be a Lutheran school teacher.
Good for him.
You know, a great kid. And I said, I want you to know, right, that I'm gonna do some things differently to try and take better care of myself. Because I want them to know. I don't want them to be in the same position I was after my dad died.
Another thing I learned, and maybe this hit you as well. I have in my life, there have been a handful of times when my life was in danger. Everything from I got trapped in a brush fire. I was in a motorcycle accident. I didn't expect to survive. I've had guns pulled on me. You know, a number of things have happened. But with the heart attack, it was suddenly my body betraying me.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, I can accept that outside factors can happen. You know, I accept right now I might not get home alive. There might be a Mack truck out there with my name
sure.
on it. But here, my own body was betraying me, and I had to think about that. It was another thing that made me really realize my own mortality.
No doubt. It's interesting for me that I went into ICU on Ash Wednesday, because that, you know, that very morning, or that, you know, at that service, we had our, you know, all our school kids in there, you know, and the people. And I am, you know, and I am, as I'm feeling my heart in trouble, I am putting ashes on people saying, dust you are, and to dust you will return.
You must have been thinking very heavily.
In retrospect, you know, I was just really kind of in the moment focusing on what I had to do. But in retrospect, this is precisely your point. You know, it was a telling moment.
Yeah.
It was a telling moment.
It is. When you look into that abyss.
So when did you, now, because you had, you wandered away from the church for a while and ended up back.
Yes, I did.
You know, where was that part of this process? Your heart stuff part of this at all?
It was, but not as great as you might think.
Sure.
I was not going to church at that time, but I was starting to become spiritual again. I hate that word spiritual, but I mean, I was starting to revert to my roots.
You're starting to think about those things.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And when I really went back to the church was when my late wife became ill.
Right.
And, you know, how to deal with that. And, you know, it's funny. In a lot of ways, it was much more difficult to deal with her situation.
Yeah.
Than it was with mine. Again, it was... I could never explain this to a non-believer. Yeah. I knew one way or the other it was going to work out.
Sure.
Now, like you knew with your kids, you know, sitting down having that discussion with your children. I know my dad, when I was an adult, dad left both my brother and me a letter about what Der Tag was what he called it the day.
Yeah.
About what would happen and how he wanted it handled. And that was something I did after the second heart attack, is I sat down and I started to basically write my own obituary.
Yeah.
And
how old were you when your dad had that conversation with you? You and your brother?
Yeah. We were both adults at the time. I'm trying to think. I was probably in my 50s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I do remember I do remember having one conversation with my dad that my mother never knew about.
Sure.
During the war, my dad was in the Army in the Pacific. And at the very tail end of the war, I mean, the way he described it was after Hiroshima, but before the Japanese surrendered. He was on a transport plane in the Philippines, and the bloody thing caught fire through a mechanical error and started to go down. And Dad said he remembered just this blind anger. You know, here he had gone through 4 years of war, had not had a scratch, and he was going to get killed just before the end of the war. Obviously, he didn't, but he never told my mother about that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Dad had his moment then. And it's, but again, you know, the thing is, there's so many things out there that you cannot control. And it has really made me aware, especially looking back on some of the stupid things I've done and some of the things that happened to me that were completely out of my control, that I'm just a blink away from the next world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most people don't think about that, I don't believe.
Yeah, and it's interesting for me because, you know, that, right, because my dad died in a car wreck, you know, when I was 23 and my brother was 20, my sister was 18. You know, that, the preciousness of life and the fragility of it has been an ever-present thing for me and my brother and sister.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my whole adult life has been, you know, that at this, that, it, but what just happened this, you know, 3 weeks ago, intensified that for me in a way that is hard to describe.
It is, but it's something you never want to forget. It's right. One of the most important lessons you will ever learn in life.
Yeah.
Lance, I got to take a break here, sure. But we got a lot more to talk about.
Nationwide KFUO Radio salutes our day sponsors on this Friday, April 12, 2019. Today's day sponsors are Joe and Cheryl Swope. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO Radio in thanksgiving to God for the birth of twins Michael and Michelle, baptized children of God. Once again, we say thank you to Joe and Cheryl Swope of St. Genevieve, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO day sponsors.
I'm Pastor Ken Bomberger. Join me weekday mornings at 7:15 for Oratio, your time of scripture, meditation, and music on KFUO, Christ for You, anytime, anywhere.
John Donne wrote poetry inspired by biblical themes.
He wrote a poem called The Lamentations of Jeremy, a poetic translation of Lamentations from Latin into English.
Donne is noted for his transformation from womanizer to Reverend Dr. Donne, Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral, a poet who became a priest in 1615 at the insistence of King James. The artistry of his poems becoming the artistry of his sermons, prose largely unnoticed until decades after his death.
When Donne's Sermons, Selected Passages was published in 1919, the Quarterly Review called them a masterpiece of English prose.
In 1632, Donne gave one of his last and best-known sermons, a meditation on Christ's last hours, using the text of Psalm 68, "And unto God the Lord belong the issues of death."
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
Well, welcome back to Let's Talk. The pastor's in. Guest pastor today is Lance O'Donnell from Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. We are discussing mortality and recent events that have made us both realize how transitory our lives are. Lance, there's something I wanted to relay to you.
Sure.
Another thing that really drove this home. I've mentioned I have remarried since my wife died. My current wife has a fairly large extended family. She has four children, and they've all got their children and things like that. And we all gather at Thanksgiving. And, I mean, there's a bunch of them. Now, even though she was divorced, she and her ex-husband remained on good terms, especially regarding their children, who are now all grown. And two Thanksgivings ago, we were all gathered and having our discussions and having our dinner, and I was having a very fun discussion with her ex on theology.
Sure.
And it was all over, after it was over, he was living in Fulton, Missouri, which is about 110 miles from here. And right after the dinner, he got in his car and got ready to drive home, and one of the daughters-in-law happened to be going in the same direction, was following him. And about 15 minutes later, he had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, man.
And the car went out of control. I mean, the daughter-in-law was behind seeing all this happening, and as the car just zooms in and out.
And this is her dad?
Father-in-law.
Father-in-law, okay.
And she's got her kids in the car. You know, that's her grandfather. And,
right.
And the son was behind him about a mile in his car. But, the thing was is that he was so healthy, hearty, and hale. The guy didn't smoke. The guy didn't drink. He didn't have any weight problems. He's about my age. And this brain aneurysm ruptured.
Sure.
Again, we don't know. The body can betray us at any time.
You do not know the day or the hour.
And that's something else to think about. And you and I both know it's out there and it's going to come.
Yep.
So what does it mean to us? How do we prepare for it? What does it mean for those we leave behind?
Well, the passing on of the faith is absolutely central. I mean, and that is, for my kids, is certainly different than the way I grew up. Right? I mean, we were really not churchgoers. So, I went through just a real crisis of the soul after my dad died. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my hope would be, you know, my kids have been raised in a very different way. You know, their lives center in Christ and his forgiveness and worship. You know, I've got a kid preparing for the teaching ministry. You know, they grew up with prayer, and you know, if something had happened to me, I know that I know that they would struggle. I mean, you're right. I have an 11-year-old boy. You know, if I had graduated to the church triumphant, I mean, that little boy would not have a father. And that would cause, you know, there would be issues. However, you know, he has a mother who loves the Lord and practices the faith. Siblings, you know, they have an anchor, and a foundation that I didn't. And, you know, that's a great thing.
I think you're correct on that. Again, I don't have children, so I don't have that experience. But I do have some relatives, and my brother in particular is not a believer, and it weighs on my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to approach it with him.
Sure.
I should. I'm a Christian. I should. But it is so difficult.
And why is that?
Oh, darn, you're asking those hard questions.
Sorry.
Lance.
I mean, is it because you have a relationship with him and you're afraid of that will fracture it, or?
That's part of it. That's part of it. And I know it won't be received. And maybe that's arrogant on me. But, you know, we've discussed it before.
Sure.
And he's just, no way. He's just, he does not believe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was my dad. but my dad had we had an amazing thing happen. I think, you know, I don't remember. Dad spent, you know, he was a altar boy and involved he really, really pretty much left the church as soon as he left home when he was 17.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my father was the one that introduced me into the atheist philosopher Ayn Rand.
Okay.
You know, that led me to abandon my faith in college. And, you know, that's kind of where Dad was. He thought the Bible was a nice book of stories and fables, but, you know, he told me that once. And then, you know, but then as I told you, when near what turned out to be the end of his life, they were about to lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was something about church music or about music that got to him. And so, you know, my mom had been begging him for years to go to church. And so he agreed to go to some Christmas cantata with her. And, you know, at this Christmas cantata, the gospel was sung, right? And my dad loved music. And so my mom said she remembered that the offering plate went around and my dad threw something in it and she didn't think anything of it. And then 3 days later, you know, on the way home from a Christmas party, he had a heart attack at the wheel and died. The next day, not knowing what had happened to my father, somebody from the church came to visit our house carrying a card that my father had filled out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've lost the card, but the card said something like, you know, I repent. It's time for me to come back.
Oh.
You know, and what an amazing gift for my family that was.
It had to have been.
You know, I tell this to folks all the time. You never, ever, 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 ever give up. I mean, you know, part of your vocation as a brother is to never give up on the faith of your brother. It is part of your calling. And by, you know, through prayer and whatever you can do,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you just never know how the how the Lord will work. You just never know.
No.
All you can do is plant some seeds and be there. Sometimes you'll have opportunity to bear witness. You know, for my dad, right? Wow, it was the music. You know, music always got to him. Church music is powerful, can be really, really powerful.
It is. It is.
As a witness, in a way that personal witness or a sermon or something can't be. Music can touch people in a way that other things can't.
You know, you mentioned Ayn Rand.
Sure.
You know, I did fall away from the church, but I never stopped believing.
Yeah, I did. I cast it aside.
And I had read Ayn Rand, and I really kind of discarded her views of religion. Some of her philosophical and political views I actually admired.
Mm-hmm.
But I never bought the atheism.
Well, good for you. Yeah, I took the whole package and tried to put it into practice, and it ended up being almost the death of me. So, yeah, that was unfortunate.
Yeah, I truly don't understand how atheists can do it. I mean, you know, I've read, for example, in the Bible, the Sadducees. They weren't atheists, but they didn't believe in the afterlife.
Yeah, they didn't believe in the resurrection.
What a wasted existence.
You know, there is something about it, you know, as we approach this time of the year and Easter, we see it at funerals. We're good this next weekend. We are our pastor emeritus here at St. Paul's, who served us for 35 years, died last week. And
oh.
Yeah, we're going to have his memorial service on Palm Saturday. So the Saturday before Palm Sunday. You know, that hope of the resurrection is ever present. It changes everything. You know, we're going to break with Lenten tradition and sing some alleluias at this pastor. You know, he served us for 35 years. You know, God bless him and his family. It was what a difference that makes. And I ask people, if you're sad, if you think that we just are here today and gone tomorrow, that we're just food for worms, then why are you sad at a funeral? Because I think deep down, right, we know that somehow deep down that this is not the way it was supposed to be, right? That we are supposed to live, and that death is an intrusion.
That's a good observation. You know, with the fall, with the original sin, you know, we live in an imperfect world, and yeah, you know, God's intent was not for us to die.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, you can say, like I once did, you know, we're just here today and gone tomorrow, but then why are you sad? I mean, I had to ask that of myself, right? I mean, right, if all we are is here today and gone, you know, we got our time, why? And I had to ask it on the deepest level, and I, you know, one of the conclusions I came to, there's got to be more to this.
No.
There's just something, right? And
did you feel when you went through your period of being an atheist, did you go through a period of hopelessness or emptiness, I guess?
Well, no, I went through, well, when I was coming out of it, I did, but, you know, at the height of it, it was absolutely the opposite of that. I mean, when I rejected God and said, I'm going to rely on my wits and use my brain, and when I, when I was following Ayn Rand hook, line, and sinker, you know, I actually improved my academics and, but what came to be is that, you know, basically worshiping yourself is, you know, and that's what Ayn Rand believed. I mean, she did basically the worship of human potential. And the problem is that we're as great a beings as we are, you know, capable of putting men on the moon with protractors and a slide rule, we're also capable of great evil and stupidity. And I had to realize that in myself, and in order, you know, to see the need for Christ and forgiveness and hope and life. And so Unfortunately for me, I really had to hit bottom. And unfortunately for my dad, it was the same. We're thankful for God's grace. And regardless of when, even the thief on the cross, right? Mm-hmm. Today you will be with me in paradise. Let's not grumble.
Well, one of the things that saw me through a lot, even in the periods where I was not a churchgoer, and I went through some rough, rough times, Lance. I'm sure, sure. that you can appreciate it on yourself. Was the realization that my life isn't mine. It's not my own.
It's interesting that you say that, because I had analogous thoughts, because it impacted my thought, the way I'm thinking about being a father in particular, but also being a husband.
Mm-hmm.
And also my service as a pastor. This health thing really, as I'm sitting there in the intensive care unit, I'm thinking, I am a total type A guy. I am take charge, hard driving. And, I'm sitting there in intensive care thinking, realizing and chastened by the Lord in that, I have lots of talented people in my parish. And realizing that I think I took some things too much into my own hands, and I need to prayerfully trust a lot of things to the people that God has placed in positions of leadership and service here. And that, it is something that I knew before,
mm-hmm.
but the prospect of, knowing that I would, knowing my recovery was going to be slower. Right, I was just going to have arthroscopic surgery, I was going to do rehab, and I was going to be back at it.
Yeah.
And then realizing I'm going to have to deal with blood clots, and I'm not going to be able to go right back at it. I'm thinking, this was one of the ways in which the Lord's saying, Lance, you're going to have to learn ever more deeply to actually practice what you preach here.
to an extent that actually happened to me, because I did have some complications from the heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up a pericardial infection, which is nasty, trust
Oof.
Me. And that knocked me out more than the heart did. It took me a good at least 6 weeks to get back on my feet. And that was the worst part of it for me, really, was the utter helplessness that I had, especially the first couple of weeks.
Were you in the hospital the whole time?
No, I was not. I was at home, and I was completely dependent on my wife.
Yep.
And it was just this utter helplessness. I hated it. Hated it.
I have great appreciation for that.
But again, it's to realize it's not your life. I mentioned, I look back and there were some times when my life was threatened. I can't even think of a couple when I shouldn't have lived.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. Why? Well, there's something as hackneyed as it sounds, there was something that he wanted me to do. Maybe this is it. Working for the Synod, talking on the radio, maybe this is it. I don't know.
Well, it certainly is, because that's where you are.
Yeah, that's where I am now.
Right.
And I ain't done yet. There's a lot more ahead of me. So at least I hope.
It's interesting you say that, because the text this weekend is from Luke 20, the gospel text, and it's where Jesus tells what's sometimes called the parable of the wicked tenants. And the tenants represent the Israel is, the religious leadership that often rejected, and people who often rejected the God's prophet. So that, a landowner sent one servant and they beat him up, and they sent another servant and they beat him up, and he sent a third servant and they beat him up. And then Jesus says, the landowner, the vineyard owner says, I will send my beloved son. Surely they'll respect him. You know, and then and in the parable he tells us, you know, they think this is the heir, we'll kill him and get the inheritance. And of course that is a, you know, that is a lesson that teaches about what's going to happen with Jesus. They're going to, the beloved son. And part of the lesson is, you know, Jesus knows going in that he's going to die.
Oh yeah.
And yet, right, this is his vocation. His vocation is to be the savior of the world. He's got to go to Jerusalem. He's got to die on the cross. Only he can do that. Only he, as God in the flesh. And you know, and likewise, this is what I'm talking to my people this weekend. You know, our vocations aren't to save the world, right? Only Jesus can do that. But you know, we are all uniquely situated by God, and there are only sometimes God places things right in front of us. And, you know, we can shy away from them, we can run away from them, but we know that this is our calling, right? We have to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, as a parent, you have to discipline your children, you know, or it could be dealing with the death of a spouse or dealing with a health issue or, you know, but sometimes there's stuff that God places in front of you and you've got to do this. You know, it's not really an option. And you know, Kip, I'm saying, you know, here we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got a brother.
Yeah.
You know, that's not an option.
You're right.
It's really not. I mean, you know, and how you go about that vocation as a Christian, of being a Christian brother, you know, you got to do that with prayer. But it's really not an option for you not to say anything. It's just not. And then the challenge is, okay, how do I go in here?
Yeah.
You know, you know, and again, that for me is in the hospital, sitting in ICU, thinking about this wonderful parish that I serve that has, you know, we have about 1,900 members, but only 400 or less coming on a weekend, you know, for worship now.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of work ahead of us, and, you know, my predisposition in some respects and my sinful nature is right to, you know, you attack that in all kind of me first way. But, you know, the truth is none of this happens without the Lord, you know, and I need to rely on, you know, I can't do all this by myself. You know, it's not the, you know, the power of my preaching or this or that. It's not, you know, the Lord is going to have to do this. So, you know, I took an hour, and I went just kind of walking through the pews at last week,
mm-hmm.
and praying. You know, Lord, you know who's going to sit here. Bring the people here that need to hear your word. You know, no amount of my great writing in our newsletter or this or that is going to draw. You know, only you, Lord, can draw them here. You know what they need to hear. And I thought about that when I was sitting in ICU. You know, I need simply, this is a reminder, this is God's church. And I need to rely on him and not on my own whatever talents might be. And that's true as my role as a father. It's true as my role as a husband.
I suspect that when you realize that lying in ICU... there was a great sense of peace that came over you. I know it did with me.
Sure.
It's weird. I mean, I've told people about this before, and they just, oh, what was it, the drugs? Yeah, well, you know, I was there in the ICU not knowing if I'm going to live or die, and it just an utter peacefulness. I've never known it before or since.
Right, and then thankfulness. You know, I'm thinking, because, you know, I went in to ICU on Ash Wednesday. My daughter's, you know, she'd been working so hard. The opening night of her musical was on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I didn't want to miss that. Right? I mean, she's worked so hard, you know, and she and her classmates. And I love, right? I mean, she's a performer. I wanted to be there. You know, my son was coming back from college to see his little sister. And, you know, when they released me on Friday, you know, around noon, you know, I knew I was going to go, you know, I spent my morning Friday proving to the nurses that my lungs could handle me being around, so they would let me out of there. You know, and I was right. I'm always thankful to be able to see my kids do their thing, whatever it is. But I sat there that night, you know, because I had been in ICU 2 days before, right? I am so thankful for the opportunity just to be here. And, you know, that it was a nice gift. Thank you, Lord.
It is. And you become aware of smaller things, sunsets, flower scents.
Yep.
Songs of birds. The dawn. You know, just... you become much more observant, at least I did. I'm sure you have as well. Much more aware of the beauty around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there. You know, things that you just didn't notice, or I just didn't notice before.
Right. Well, and I am such a type A guy. You know, I laugh. Our associate pastor here, Steve Charnell, is Mr., as the kids say, chill type B guy. You know, quiet. I told him when I got out, I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to learn how to be a type B pastor. And and he laughed and he said, you know, only a type A guy would say something that stupid. you know, but it's, you know, well, it's not totally true, but, you know, it's learning, you know, learning to let God do his thing.
Yeah, you have to. You have to. I never would have thought I would wind up working at a religious radio station. you have to understand. I mean, when I first started broadcasting back in 1970, that was the running joke. You know, yeah, you do it this way, you're going to wind up doing religious broadcasting.
Right.
Okay. You know, I just didn't cross my mind that this would ever happen.
Right? Did I tell you my first thought when I had my first thought that I would be a pastor?
Uh-uh.
Did I tell you? So, right from the time I was 4 years old, I wanted to be president of the United States.
Okay.
Before I could read, right? I spent my whole childhood. I was the president of everything growing up, right? And so I went off to Washington D.C. for college because you know if you're going to be president, that's where you should go to school.
Definitely a type A.
Right. Yeah. Right. I got involved in the presidential campaign that year. I was 19 and I realized, oh, good gravy. I don't want to do this. I really don't want to do this. I don't know what I want to do, but I really don't want to do this. I had, you know, kind of had my midlife crisis at 19. I transferred schools, went back to Michigan to my second choice school. And it was that right after I started the second semester at a different school. I had this thought, you know, and again, I was in the process of leaving my faith, and I had this thought that came, maybe you should be a pastor. And I was so ticked at that. I'm thinking, are you kidding me, God? I was going to be president of the United States, and I'm going to be a stupid pastor? And I said, forget this. Right, and that's when I ran the other direction, which is a typical pastoral Jonah story.
Well, same thing with me. I mean, to my mind, this is the height of my career. This is what I was meant to do.
Yeah,
Lance, thanks so much for being on the program. I hope
my honor.
Mine as well. Believe me, when we're serving God. So this is it for Let's Talk. The pastor is in, Lance O'Donnell of Akamonowoc, Wisconsin. I pronounce it right. Has been my guest.
God bless you. Have a great day.
Amen.
To chat with the pastor. Your support is vital for this program to continue. To learn about giving opportunities, call Mary at 314-996-1518. You can make a gift safe, secure, and easily online at kfuo.org. Thank you for listening and supporting. The Pastor is in on Worldwide KFUO.